Hello, Internet. There are many places where you could get your running news, and there are many places you can get your podcasts. We're happy you chose this one.
I'm Chris Chavez.
I'm Alex Lohr.
And I'm Mitch Kastoff.
And you're listening to the Running Our Mouths podcast.
And Bannister has done it. Though he's out on his feet, his coach and team manager tell him he's achieved his ambition. The mile in 3 minutes, 59.4 seconds.
Steve Prefontaine of the United States. Let's keep an eye and see what he does in the early going.
And could this be Ovid's first defeat? Ovid's in trouble. And so gets the revenge he wants.
Bradley is making a move. It has come down to this. Bradley and Salazar. The motorcycle's got to get out of the way. Here comes Bradley. He's got to make a move on Salazar.
Watch the clock. It's goal for both. And again, he's done it again. A new world record for Usain Bolt. They say lightning doesn't strike twice.
Welcome back to the Running Our Mouths podcast. It's been a while since we did this. Lots of stuff went on. I graduated from college. Mitch got a new job in the meantime as well. Alex is still being a dad. So we got Kevin Liao back on the show this week. And today's conversation is going to be pretty much all pre-classic with a few notes here and there. And we'll start off just by going to someone who was on the ground in Eugene. Mitch, what was the atmosphere like out there? Sellout crowd this weekend. And you were there last year too, so how would you compare the experience?
Well, actually, I'll defer to Kevin on this one because he summarized my thoughts really well. Where every time I leave the meet last 2 years, and for me the last, I guess, four, I just think this is an awesome meet. And I know that statistically, All Athletics had branded it as it's either the best or second best meet in the last 4 years in terms of performances. It's just a really good show that Nike puts on, and the athletes come out, and Eugene's a great place to have it.
It kind of shows you like why Eugene needed to get Worlds, because when you bring like all these world-class athletes there, it just makes it so much better. We're used to seeing NCAAs or USAs there, but when you just have like the international presence, can't beat it. With those tweets and just pictures that were being posted out, got me really excited. I'm out for my first trip out to Eugene. Even though I've been covering track, I guess, now for 3 years, first trip out will be at the end of next month for USA's. So really excited about that. But let's start talking about some of these performances. Starting on Friday night, we'll go with the night of distance, I guess, is what they tabbed it as. Before even the stars even came out, Carlos Villarreal, of the high school athlete, wins the high school boys mile in 4:05:25 over Mikey Brannigan. What did you guys think of that kick at the very end? We'll start with Kevin.
Yeah, I didn't see it coming. Honestly, I don't pay as close attention to high school anymore, so I didn't know really who these guys were, but great kick. It kind of was like Bernie Montoya-esque. They're both from Arizona, so there's some parallels there.
I don't know if it was on the broadcast, but his post-race interview on the infield was really good. He's from Rio Rico High, which is the school that Marcus Wheeler went to, and where he had committed suicide a few weeks ago. And the girl who won the women's race, or girls' race, is Danny Jones. She's from Desert Vista. She's also from Arizona. And so they both wore orange bracelets or wristbands in his memory. And so Carlos said that, you know, that one was for him. And so I don't even know if that was on the broadcast, but it was really a touching start to the night.
Yeah, I think I might have saw a tweet or two about that. I'm not sure if Villarreal, he might be in the dream mile field, but, you know, just another one of those guys to root for. And I'm sure Alex will give us some lowdown before the dream mile of what to kind of expect. Now, we'll get back to the 5K. They went through 5:18 through 2K. Galen took the lead, I guess, with a lap or two to go. Maybe 800 or 600 was when he really made his move. And then Yomif Kajelcha, the 17-year-old, probably butchered that name, from Ethiopia, 13:10 for the win. Is Ethiopia back, you think? Because we've got Kajelcha now, and we've got Hagos Gebrewet. Like, is this the year for Ethiopia to get on the medal stand and kind of maybe even challenge Mo Farah, dethrone him, and just jump right to the top? Mitch, we'll get your thoughts on this one.
Ethiopia is very good at running. That's the best analysis I can really give you. They are just, they're good at running fast, and they're good at closing fast races even quicker. So, is it back? I don't think it's ever left. But if I had to just poke a quick hole in the argument, Mo Farah has not lost a 10K since Daegu. That's 4 years ago. So, is it back in the five? Yeah, it's back in the five. It's never really been gone. Is it back in the 10? Will we see a Ibrahim Jalilin-esque performance at a World Championships? At this point, I have to say probably not.
But what about Galen's performance? What'd you take out of that, Kevin? Do you really see him as a medal contender?
Yeah, I mean, I think he is where he should be. We've seen him in these Diamond League caliber 5Ks, put in similar performances. It was interesting. Ken Go wrote a couple good pieces this week on the Oregon Project, and Alberto had discussed how they kind of went away from some of the speed stuff last year or the last couple of years, and that may explain why he hadn't been finishing quite as well as he was in 2012. So I would like to see what happens, when he gets into that championship race and whether he can kick with those guys in the last lap of a 10K. That's, going to be the key. That's why he won a medal in London, and that's going to need to be how he does it in Beijing.
It was a little bit of a quiet performance, but Legat was 2 seconds behind him in fourth. I think going into the last lap, he had to pass a couple guys. I feel like at this point, he might be... when I saw him racing on Friday, I felt like he looked a little bit tired for the most part. It might just be just all the indoor racing and then finally getting out to outdoors now. But I'd still... This is more for you and I, Kevin, since we put together those rankings for the most part. You would still feel that they're both locks for the 5K, right?
Yeah.
And then from Ryan Hill's performance, who he ran, let me just get it real quick. He ran 13:15. The 5K, he's finally found his groove since 2013. Is he the favorite there? Or would you want to take someone like Rally Masters if he stuck to the 5K later on?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely Hill. It's going to be, it's probably going to be slow, and it's going to come down and kick, and Hill's shown he can kick, with a Legat or Rupp. The others, Lopez hasn't looked good at all this year, so I don't really know what he's up to. So, yeah, I would definitely put Hill in that third spot.
Over Ben True, who won this weekend in New York?
Depends what event Ben True. It's weird. Ben True's looked really good on the roads this year. He just beat Sambu, who's, the king of the roads. But when he ran at Peyton Jordan, he didn't look good at all. Got beat by a lot of guys. So he's kind of had a weird season. I want to see what he does on the track.
I'm awaiting Ben True's ultimate half marathon, then maybe down the road, the marathon debut. I think he'll be really good in the half. But for now, it sounds like he wants to focus on the 5K on the track, which if I was him and I had to pick between the 5 and the 10, I'd go for the 10. I think that's where his cards are a little bit better. And now that we mentioned the 10K, Mo Farah continues his winning streak, as we've mentioned before. But he had a little bit of company there with Tanui and Kemwar. I thought it was a really interesting and funny way Kemwar was running that race, because he just was not helping the other two guys out. So I was intrigued to see if he was going to kick at the very end and get the two guys. But Mo Farah comes away with the victory. He seemed a little disappointed. What do you think was the reason why he was disappointed, Kevin?
Yeah, I think he wanted a faster time. He's a guy who races and not a guy who just is good at time trialing. So, it's one of those things. He's never going to really touch some of those really, really fast times that Bekele did. But, he races, and when it comes down to the last 100, there's no one in the 10K who can match him. It was an interesting race. I would have thought he would try to pull away earlier, but he didn't. And so I don't know if that was intentional or that's how he was feeling, but certainly a different tactic than we usually see from Mo, who, goes to the front and strings it out a lot earlier on.
I always remember watching in 2013 with Mitch sitting on a couch, and you said that when Mo goes to the front pretty much in a 10K within the last few laps, he never gives it up. And you looked at some of his past races to before you even said that. And then you tweeted, middle of maybe the final lap, Mo Farah won. And that it was a joke, I think, because he said it was a scheduled tweet. But at what point did you think he had this locked up?
It's just there are certain subtleties when you get to really high level of running where you kind of just tell where people are going to win. Our copywriter was watching the mile race with a bunch of Kenyans, and the bunch of Kenyans goes, Suleiman's going to win this race, just based on how he looked. And then he did. With Mo, there was a point where I was a tiny bit worried right before the bell. And then, oddly enough, he took the lead, I think, on the turn. But he just wanted to give himself some room to really hammer home in the last 100 meters. And with him, if you just go back and watch some of those races, people will try and challenge him for the rail, and he'll hold them off all the time. And so I didn't necessarily see that out of him tonight, which might be why he was kind of upset. And the reason, the second reason, is that they couldn't, he wanted to run fast, a little faster than what he did. And not to say that he couldn't have done it by himself. The greats have done it by themselves. I know one of Bekele's times was silly fast, like mostly all alone. But they just couldn't find a rabbit to go that far for him this year. So no, even with, there's a big, big money incentives for some people. And, you know, it's really hard to find a 13, 15 guy who's willing to go 6,000 meters, 8,000 meters. And so Mo is disappointed, but, I mean, there's a silver lining. So, I mean, he can't be that upset.
Tanui and Kimura, do you think those are two of the biggest threats that he's got down in Beijing?
Yes, I guess, but I wouldn't call them direct threats. It would be interesting to see if any of the 5K guys step up. I know that Gebre Mesqel like kind of experimented with last year, and so right now, or 2 years ago,
I think he said he wants to focus on the roads when he was in Boston. It was a really odd decision, but he's only run one race on the track, and I think he wants to move to the roads where the money's at.
Well, and it's hard to say. I mean, Tanui was a bronze medalist in 2013. He would be his biggest threat, but I just don't see anyone really genuinely challenging him in the 10K.
Oh, also, shout out to Cam Levins on a Canadian record. That was, he looked like he soloed most of that. Given that, awesome run from him.
It's 12th place finish for Hassan Mead, I think, 27:33. Diego Estrada also, I think, set a personal best that night. So you've got these two other guys behind Galen for the American spots, but I feel like if Diego Estrada makes a national team, this will probably be it in the 10K, and then to try and turn the page for the marathon and the trials. I don't know if 2016 will be a national team for him, so that was Friday night, just in, I think I tweeted out the only years in which the pre-classic 10,000 meter race has gone under 27 minutes are some pretty big names. 08, Bekele, 14, Rupp, and then 11 and 15 with Mo. So that kind of wrapped up Friday's track action at night. And then let's just immediately jump into Saturday. Before the pre-classic even gets started, Grant Fisher runs 4 flat. At the Michigan State meet for 1600, and then 401 if you wanted the mile. They had the finish line ready to see if he was going to go sub-4. You guys think he's ready to run sub-4 alone since Matthew Maiten is not going to be at the Dream Mile? We'll go with Kevin.
I mean, certainly people are going to challenge him. I think certainly not going to be alone. They're high school kids, are gutsy, and some, you know, there are going to be a bunch of them who try to follow him. In New York City, I think it's going to come down to pacing, who they get as rabbits, and also the weather, because you know it. Randall's Island typically doesn't have the best weather, and so you know, we've seen like Rysbykus when he broke it, the weather was not good, but he did it anyways, and I think Fisher's probably in shape to do it, even if the conditions aren't the best.
Yeah, I mean, I've been saying he's been ready for a while. It sucks to put a lot of pressure on a high school kid who's not named Grant Fisher, but it's going to come down to the pacing. And so you just need to get a level-headed rabbit who's a high school kid, and that's just something that is a tough ask. The weather, it's funny, people talk a lot of smack about the Pacific Northwest and the weather out here, but yeah, the Instagram Grand Prix, you guys can't catch a break with the rain. And so I think even if it does rain, you know, Lucas ran that time in pretty crummy weather. So is it something that we're just kind of perpetrating, like a myth we're perpetrating here, or is it a truth?
Yeah, so last year I was there. The weather, it was raining. It was kind of damp. Actually, no, it wasn't. It was kind of just humid. It might have been, it was kind of overcast. And Grant Fisher won there 4-1. So I think if it's somewhat similar to that, he's in much better shape. He'll get it done. I'm excited for that race, actually. And I think they'll probably get, like, the top 800 high school kid to get him through 800. And, I think he could do it. Because if you watch the video of this Michigan State meet, he was just so far ahead of the other guys where he can do this by himself. So let's say at a similar distance, mile 1600, Ben Blankenship wins the not the main mile that they had at the pre-classic, but I guess it was the international mile, where he won it in 3:55, taking down some Kenyan scalps at the finish line. I tweeted out, "I'm sold. I'm sold on Ben Blankenship as maybe my third guy for the U.S. team, as long as he stays healthy." It's a little weird because the OTC just sometimes doesn't put it together like at championship stages. But I think Ben Blankenship will do it. He could be the third guy behind Leo and behind Centrowitz. Are you in agreement with me here, Kevin?
Yeah, I that was actually a great observation by you. I'm sold as well. With the one caveat of him being in third is that if it's slow and Andrew Wheeting's there, he's going to finish third. Like, it's just, we kind of saw it in at Oxy when he's at the front, then fell back. But when it came to the last 100, he kicked past a ton of people. So if I was Blankenship, or if I was the OTC, I guess they're all on the same team technically, but if I'm Blankenship, I try to work something out with someone to make sure it's decently fast so that Wheating's not in the mix.
Yeah, because I remember you texting me middle of the week before pre. You said Wheating might be your third guy. And then Mitch, are you sold on Blankenship?
Potentially, yeah. It's hard to tell. I've watched him for so long when he was running some crazy 3Ks at Minnesota and some DMR stuff. And yeah, he's really shown no sign of slowing down this year, which is also my fear for him. But it's hard to bet a guy who's just not losing.
You know, I'm happy for Ben Blankenship because in 2013, when I spoke to him, he was a guy who really didn't have too much self-confidence. Now he's kind of really grown into his own. World Relays gave him a little bit of a boost. In this performance, I think really is going to go ways in helping him stay motivated and knowing what his potential is. So now let's drop down in distance. We'll go to the 400. Allison Felix over Sonny Richards-Ross. And I guess we're still talking about the scheduling controversy for Worlds. What should Allison Felix focus on? Because I guess now 50.05 is the fastest she's run since Daegu. So she's got top medal potential in the 400. If you were Allison Felix, would you go 4 or 2?
So with Allison, yes, logistically the double is impossible. There are people saying that you could do it, but I have not been following the schedule as close as I possibly can. But from what I've heard, it's not doable. It's ill-advised. So what does she do, the 2 or the 4? Well, when she opened her season in the 200 in Doha, 21:98, that was her 6th fastest time that she's ever run. So I'm like, okay, yeah, great, 200, bread and butter. Then she goes run she runs the 400 at pre, and a lot of people were saying, you know, why isn't this in the main event? It wasn't a Diamond League event, so they couldn't put it in the broadcast schedule. Should it have been the main event? Yes, the Sonya Richards-Ross, Allison Felix, Noveline Mills matchup should have been broadcasted. It wasn't, but Allison comes and wins, looks very, very controlled the whole time. She runs 50.05. That's also her 6th fastest time ever. So which does she want to choose? It's tough because it really, she took down a lot of big names in the 400 who are in decent form. The Americans have not been running super well. Natasha Hastings had an off day. I haven't seen really a Francine McCrory-esque performance this year, but I would be concerned about the 200 just because there's a lot of names popping up out of there. If Shelline Fraser-Pryce gets it together, there's a lot of, you know, Elaine Thompson, another Jamaican sensation. So I would almost go with the four, oddly enough, just because I think she knows she can win it, but it remains to be seen.
I don't think it's a clear cut at all in the 400. You know, she just isn't as experienced in it. It's a hard race to run, period. And, you know, when you're racing against Sonia, who's been doing it for, you know, over a decade, I think the 200 is definitely safer for her. She knows she can win it, especially, I mean, running sub 22 in May is crazy. For setting her up for the Olympic year, I think she should do, you know, the same ramp up that she did in 2011, go 400, but I wouldn't say it's clear cut win for her yet.
I'm going to just go ahead and say that she should decide this with a coin toss, no pun intended there. Now moving on,
or a runoff.
Yeah. The next event on the track was the men's 800, where the local Mo Aman in the OTC jersey gets the crowd going, wins over Nigel Amos, whose form just still has not improved, but still gets the job done. And we had a McLuffy sighting for third place. With these two guys running well this weekend, and Rudisha maybe a concern, is the 800 pretty even at this point?
Completely wide open. Yeah, I mean, I could see five different guys winning it at Worlds. We haven't, yeah, Rudisha may not even make it to the starting line. We'll see how serious his injury is. But I could even see like one of the Polish guys mixing it up. You know, it's unlike previous years where there has been an alpha dog, there certainly isn't this year. On the American side, like, where's Dwayne Solomon? Like, I haven't seen much and been impressed by a lot of these 800 guys so far this spring. And it's quite possibly just as open for the three U.S. spots.
I feel like the only U.S. guy right now who I would put money on is, I guess, Kaz. Kaz has been looking pretty good throughout throughout the season. The only that Puerto Rico race was a little shaky, but I think he said he had like Red Bull or tried something out before the race that didn't really sit well. I'll go with Kaz maybe as the favorite. Not the favorite to win it all. I'll still go with Dwayne to win it all. But it's pretty wide open. Brandon Johnson remains yet to be seen too much of, and Nick Simmons is just getting back into it. So U.S. is pretty wide open. But Mitch, what are your thoughts on just the 800 in general for Worlds? I feel like this is a little bit more wide open than 2013 on the international stage, but the U.S. team is weaker than 2013. So do you agree with both those statements?
Yeah, there's no one running blazing fast like we've seen in years past. And so there's a lot of guys running like 144 high, like 143 high. I mean, even a guy like Suleiman, who we've seen run the 800. By the way, he had a great quote about whether he wants to run the 15 or 8. He was saying something about he can't eat your favorite food all the time. So his English is getting really good. That guy's going to be a superstar. But in the world, like, I really, really love Mo Aman's move to OTC. I just like it a lot. He was down in Austin for a while. Then I don't even know where he was in between. Now he's back in the U.S. So I just love when a guy comes over and does that. He ran very bad in either Doha or Shanghai. I forget which one. So I did not put him on the radar to win this race. Comes back, defies pretty much all everyone's, his own expectations, and wins in front of his new home crowd. And so is he the guy to beat? I guess, yeah. I mean, really, he has to be. DJ Zorro, he's a guy that's run one of the top times of all time, and definitely in the top 10. And he just didn't look that great this weekend. So it remains to be seen. It's a toss-up. In terms of the U.S., there's no one running super consistent. You have to give it to a guy like Kaz, who's just doing his thing right now. He's not running terribly bad. Like, even a guy like Jock, who ran really well at Ponce, like 145, came out and ran like 146. I wasn't super stoked with it. Dwayne was either hurt or sick this weekend. He had to pull out late, and so Nick is just kind of, you know, slowly getting back into it with an emphasis on the slow part.
Someone who wasn't slow this year so far, Ezekiel Kemboy, gets the crowd going in his dance as he wins. Didn't punch anyone in the final home stretch this year. So Kemboy's back. I was actually really impressed with Evan Jaeger's race. It was nice that the camera kept him pretty close the entire time. So he was fourth, but in that final lap looked all right. Kevin, you spoke to him, and we had him. We put him on the podcast a couple weeks ago. How did he look to you in this race, just based off of that conversation that you had with him at Stanford?
Yeah, I think, you know, certainly step in the right direction. Was almost got his American record in that race. What worries me is just that the top two guys broke away early and he didn't go with them. Just because at Worlds he's going to have to race against four Kenyans because they have the defending world champ. And that makes it extremely tough for him to get on that podium. You know, he's got to make a habit of going with these guys no matter what, because they're not going to come back to him.
Hewling and Cabral also in the race. Cabral pretty close to his personal best. Mitch, where do you size up those two guys? Are they your 2-3?
It's good to see Don running really well. I think he was 8-19. And that's close to the 2012 Don we saw break into the scene. Dan, not a super awesome race for him, 8:25. So you have to, again, consider a guy like, I haven't looked at the steeple list too in depth, but I know that like Travis Mahoney's running pretty well. Stanley Cabane is American citizenship. And so, like, if you're an 8:20 guy at this point, you have to think yourself of like a Deshaun Turner, or I'm gonna even go back to his first name, Acorn, who made the team in 2012. If you're an 8:20, 8:25 guy, maybe like even 8:28 guy, you just need a fast last lap. And so I'm forgetting a guy like Corey Leslie, who just ran a pretty quick. He's running a lot of quick miles. And so Jaeger's a lock after that. I mean, who really knows?
Yeah, Corey Leslie just finished second at that South Carolina 1500, which, for all the jokes we cracked about Swarthmore a couple weeks back, Kyle Merber finally breaks his PR in the 15 for Ed down in South Carolina. So that was good to see. But yeah, Leslie is going to be a contender for the steeple. That indoor fitness looks like it's translated really well into outdoor season. But yeah, Deshaun Turner's coming back from injury. That third spot's going to be up for grabs. That's going to be an interesting race. But I think I'd go with Hewling and Cabral right behind Jaeger. Now, this is something that Kevin and I were talking about in the last couple podcasts, and it's the old guard versus new guard of U.S. sprinting. And just as right after we had that whole conversation, English Gardner is back. And I was really happy to see her get the win in the international 100-meter dash this weekend, because 10.84, personal best. She's had her ups and downs in the last past year. Really didn't look like herself from 2013, and I was missing that because, I mean, I was really excited in 2013. Even, I think, wrote an article saying that U.S.'s sprinting futures are looking a lot brighter than Jamaica's. And she was a big part of that. So 10.84, she was crying right afterwards in the race. Really great to see her back. So now, I guess, she made us eat our own words, Kevin.
Yeah, it was great to see her back. That totally came out of nowhere for me. She ran back at Mount Sac and looked terrible and like was getting beat by her old Oregon teammate Prandini, which probably didn't feel good, but I guess things are coming along. And you know, Tori Bowie ran well in the fast section, so I think those are probably your two favorites for the U.S. team. And then you got some other names, Jetter in the mix for third. I can't think of anyone else at this point.
I would put Prandini over Jetter, actually. And because Jetter just didn't look so great to me just in this race. She's age is another factor. It's not really about age, but really kind of the mileage that are put on those legs. And she's been injury prone since 2012. So I like someone like Prandini, as long as, you know, everything goes well in Eugene, no injuries. I'd put Prandini over over Carmelita Jeter.
She's going to have a lot of work in her legs, though, after NCs, because she's going to be running 100, 200 long jump and probably a relay. So that's a big consideration. We haven't really seen her drag her or continue her season to USA's before, I don't believe.
The thing about that is Oregon's playing it smart because they're saving her for this last portion of the season. We haven't seen her since Penn Relays up until this weekend. So I think that month of not a lot of competition really helped. We didn't see her Pac-12s or anything like that. Oregon's playing it smart with Brandini. And then in the fast section, Shelly Ann Fraser-Pryce says that world lead isn't staying for too long, runs 10.81 and takes it. Not too much to say on her end. She's going to be there in Beijing, probably a favorite once again. On the men's side, Tyson Gay wins the men's 100-meter dash in 9.88, which makes him the third fastest of 2015 so far. I thought it was really interesting how he talked about that medal. There was a great interview by Lewis Johnson right afterwards. He's talked to everyone from 2012 in the 4x1. They're all giving their medals back. Only person he didn't talk to was Gatlin. So that was just something, another tidbit. Tyson Gay is probably going to make the U.S. team, whether a lot of people like it or not. But that 100 field is pretty crowded too, if we think about it. Gay, Gatlin, Bailey, Rogers, someone like Trayvon Bromell. Who's the fast guy that's left out, Kevin?
Marvin Bracey. He just broke 10 for the first time last week. And so to me, he'll be in the mix as well. He showed a lot of potential finishing second in World Indoors last year. He'll be in the mix as well.
Yeah. It's going to be a stacked U.S. team. As of right now, I guess I would put USA 4x1 over Jamaica at Beijing. Just for now, I'll put that on the record. Now, women's 800. Ajay Wilson suffers her first loss over 800 meters in 2015. Really gutsy run by Brendan Martinez taking the lead into the final lap. I actually am not concerned at all by Ajay Wilson's performance here. This is the fastest she's ever run this early on in the season. So you had a tweet back at me, Kevin. Who would I take right now as my third person for Team USA? I'd still go Ajay Wilson 1. 2, I'll go with Brendan Martinez, and then my third would be Alicia Montano. Agree or disagree?
At this point, I disagree. I'm going to put Chanel Price or Maggie Vessi third. The thing with Montano is before, when she would front run, she was strong enough to relatively hang on, but it just doesn't feel like she's quite there. You know, she took the lead yesterday and really fell apart. Like, she ended up running like 2:03. I've never really seen her fade that badly. Just concerned about whether she's strong enough at this point to hold off a Price or a Vessi if she does decide to go to the front early.
Mitch, who's your three?
Ooh, it is hard to say. Who knows how Laura Race is going to shape up this year? As someone, I'm just looking at the descending list right now, and I don't even see her on it right now. But Chanel has proven herself, and I feel like she deserves to be there. Maggie is running well again. Even Phoebe Wright's coming around. So that third spot is a tough one. I will not put anything down.
Cool. All right, quick hitters right now. Pascal Martineau-Lagarde wins the men's 110 hurdles in 13.06. Aries Merritt was second in 13.12. Oliver third, 13.14. And that's the fastest Aries Merritt has run since July 2013. Aries Merritt back in the mix for USA's, even though that 100-meter hurdle team is probably going to be one of the toughest to make. I'm just going to keep going through a lot of this. Alexi Pappas was pacing the women's 5K, even though that 5K was kind of just a solo effort by Dibaba. Mitch, the Dibaba sisters, 2016, what excites you about that matchup?
Well, the Runes going to win everything, so they're very good at running. It's a pleasure. Like, it's an honor for me to even just watch them in person run. What she did to everyone else in the race, violated so many treaties of the Geneva Convention that I'm surprised they didn't arrest her when she finished.
Moving on to the next race, men's 200-meter dash. Haters gonna hate. Justin Gatlin sets a PR, or ties his PR of 1968. He says it's gonna be a rumble in the jungle in Beijing when he goes up against Usain Bolt. Your thoughts on Gatlin's season so far, Kevin, without cursing?
The dude's fit. I mean, there's nothing you can really say more than that. He's in really good shape, and at this point, I don't really see how Bolt can catch up. It's early. I know it's early, but I want to see what Bolt does at Jamaican Championships. But he's really far behind at this point. He's certainly capable of getting there and beating Gatlin, but it'll be fun.
Yeah. Well, the thing with Jamaican Championships is that Bolt's probably just going to do his regular thing. He's got his lane saved in Beijing already. So Adidas Grand Prix was probably going to be something interesting to watch for Bolt. But for the most part, I am in agreement with you. Gatlin over Bolt is what it looks like right now in Beijing. Jenny Simpson, 4 flat 98. Really excited for her. It was a great race for the women's Americans. They had five girls under 404. Emma Coburn set a PR. Alexa Ephraimson breaks the U.S. high school record in 403.39, previously held by Mary Kane. Kevin, if you're Mary Kane watching from home right now in New York, are you worried?
Well, I think Mary Kane should be worried about herself and not what others are doing at this point.
I will say it is a travesty that of the lack of hype or well-deserved praise for Alexa Ephraimson. She is running out of her mind right now. I don't see any Sports Illustrated features. I don't see any New York Times features. And I get it. Someone did it first, and now she's doing it better. But then due to the laws of hype, you can't do it as big as the one before. But still, if her name was Mary Kane, we would have gone insane over what happened. She's running. I really can't even believe the transformation from even last summer. You know, Cranny beats her, and we're like, oh, Cranny's going to go to college, and she's going to be have an amazing career at Stanford. And then Alexa comes out, and she had run 407 last year, and now she's running 403s. Come on, people. You guys need to do a diligence here. Give my girl some love.
Yeah, and the TV coverage didn't even mention her breaking anything. So I guess it matters who your coach is, somewhat.
Might have been a little bit of a stretch, but I think Jonathan Galt of Let's Run said it was very similar to Webb during his high school run. But I don't think so. I honestly don't think so. I might have been a year early. I did write a feature on Alexa last year for ESPN, but I gave it a little shameless plug. So in the piece, Brenna Martinez calls her a monster, and that she's coming. That Alexa Ephraimson is really fast. So she was right the entire time. Final race of the pre-classic was the Bowerman Mile, where we saw our first back-to-back Bowerman Mile winner. Suleiman takes it for the first time back-to-back since Kiprop 2009-2010. First time that Centrowitz beats Kiprop. Is that a good sign heading towards Beijing? Mitch.
Centro, man, I really wanted him to win that one. He just didn't have it at the very end. Not a big deal. He is coming off a very, very good winner. He is already a very good championship racer. And so, yeah, I'm really excited to see what he runs. 331 is very, very fast. She ran last year. But, yeah, he looks like a man who's got a fire lit under him. So I'm really excited to see what he can do.
Yeah, this was a huge step for Centro. He's never really... The chink in his armor was that he wasn't good in fast Diamond League races. Even though this race was kind of tactical early, you know, proved a lot to me that he can race with these guys outside of championship. Also, I don't think anyone noticed this, but I just watched an interview with him post-race. He had, like, racing stripes shaved into his eyebrows. It's legit. Take a look, everyone.
That and the new chest tattoo that says, like, father like son. It was an interesting move, a chest tattoo, but when you're that fast, I think it'll look great. So that kind of much was pre-classic in more or less 45 minutes. Sorry if this podcast ran a little bit longer than the usual ones, but yeah, we're excited. We're back. We're doing this podcast again, hopefully weekly, as long as we're not all busy doing stuff. And I guess next up is Rome, where Jenny Simpson will be running the 1500, and I'm sure there's going to be other fast fields assembled there. So we'll talk about that. Get ready for NCAAs, and we'll catch you guys next week.